It's the base move. Hello to all, and thank you for tuning in. I am Hilary Bruffer, and I would like to introduce you to the third series of It's Debatable, a weekly discussion of current affairs. This was first featured in 2004 by the Department of International Relations in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta, as part of research methods. After a year's absence, the department teamed up with MIRSA, the Malta International Relations Students Association, to bring the show back on air. Each week, two students from the department will put forward a topic of their interest. An expert in the field will join us in the second part of the program to give us his opinion on the affair. Today's participatory students are Luca Lacitignola and Mikhail Pisani, and their chosen topic for discussion is WikiLeaks. Our guest speaker will be the public affairs officer from the United States Embassy, Mr. Elijah Waterman. In recent months, we've heard a lot of talk in the media about the release of thousands of classified diplomatic documents. For some, WikiLeaks is the future of investigative journalism, and for others, the site ought to be shut immediately. On October 22nd, WikiLeaks revealed 400,000 documents on the war in Iraq. The biggest leak of the story headlined the press. So can we make a war in transparency? What are the risks associated with this information site? Before inviting our two students yet into the heat of the debate, I would like to invite Dr. Carmen Samut, who lectures on the media and international relations here at the University of Malta, to set out the facts as they stand today. Dr. Samut, what is your take on the matter?
Well, in the past decade or so, individuals, work environments, the economy and politics had to adapt to the exigencies of the information society. In this society, information technologies have become central in every aspect of our lives. We have become practically digital citizens. Converged technologies, communication technologies, influence our behavior, lifestyles, work performance, shopping trends, socialization, and technologies have influenced the way we date, our leisure time, and the way we participate in civil society and in political life. A further development is that individuals are no longer merely receivers and users of information. They are also able to create and diffuse information. The new technologies are interactive. This greatly empowers us if we have adequate access and the right competencies. Through blogs, emails, websites, etc., we can connect to virtual communities and we can get mobilized in political action. We have ample evidence that even the harshest regimes find it difficult to censor and tame the emancipatory potential of the social media. And I think that the recent events in Tunisia and earlier uprisings in Iran are clear examples of this. WikiLeaks and the responses to them is a case in point where even liberal democracies are being held accountable. And the recent leaks of US diplomatic cables are a clear example of how the new media may complement the role of the old media to safeguard freedom of expression and preserve the watchdog function of the media. The millions of cables that were allegedly leaked by a disenchanted young soldier were delivered to WikiLeaks, and later they were passed by WikiLeaks to key newspapers across the globe. The Guardian, El País, Der Spiegel, Le Monde, and eventually to the New York Times. All this should reinforce the notion that diplomacy and foreign policy can no longer safely take place behind closed doors. As states slowly adapt to a new environment where some bitter wars are being fought on a virtual platform, they should also realize that diplomatic secrecy is seriously undermined by technologies that permit greater transparency. As a result, just like individuals, states need to adapt to the new context permitted by the information society. Many claim that confidentiality in Foreign Office dispatches is necessary and vital. Some even claim that secrecy remains essential for international security. Yet this is not always the case. WikiLeaks made us aware that there are instances where covert activities may have undermined peace efforts, stability, and public trust in international political circles. Take, for instance, the revelations that the United States made efforts to spy on United Nations officials. Did this help or hinder international peace efforts? And if this espionage was detrimental to the work of the United Nations, aren't we entitled to know? WikiLeaks has been around for several years, and its story is still unfolding. In the past, contributions have been acknowledged by established and credible media organizations. For instance, the role of WikiLeaks in the release of information on human rights breaches in Kenya not only influenced the electoral results in that country, but it also was celebrated by Human Rights Watch and others. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is now subject to numerous controversies and accusations. Many believe that he's victim to strong efforts that were made to demonize him. However, apart from Assange, there are hundreds of other contributors to WikiLeaks. Some observers now claim that the recent legal battles which are being fought by Assange, the high-profile defection of some key activists, and attempts to block donations will probably sound the death knell to WikiLeaks. Yet, in spite of the current attacks by powerful states, WikiLeaks is still receiving sensitive information, and information from whistleblowers is its lifeline. In mid-January of 2011, it received documents from a former Swiss banker who wants to disclose wealthy businessmen and politicians that took advantage of Swiss bank secrecy in order to evade paying taxes. As a result, it is unlikely that WikiLeaks can be stopped altogether. If states do tame WikiLeaks, similar websites will surely sprout elsewhere. Moreover, states can hardly afford to taint their democratic credentials by censoring WikiLeaks and harassing its activists, as this will weaken their moral authority as they support human rights issues in international fora. In my view, the only option is for diplomacy and international players to acclimatize and accept the transformed environment brought about by the rise of the information society.
Thank you, Dr. Samut, for that highly interesting introduction. Let us move now on to the debate. Luca, let us start with you. What are the interests and the targets of Assange on publishing reserved documents, in your opinion?
Well, the position taken by Assange is simply to deliver information to people in the name of freedom of speech and information. However, Assange has already signed a contract with the British publishing house, publisher Kenotage Books, receiving money that should be used to defend himself by the process of sexual violence of which he is accused in Sweden. Moreover, when Assange passed the stolen files to the newspapers, he has tend to publish them only in the specific dates. Meanwhile, as we know, Geta News, the press, should publish it without external interference. Assange also threatened the newspapers to not give any more secret files if they would have not respected the agreements. Thus, many points of Assange and his interest to publish certain documents in a specific time remain certainly unclear.
What have you to say to that, Mikhail?
Well, I agree with Luca on one point, the fact that Julian Assange has never stolen or illegally copied as much as one single document. All the documents WikiLeaks has published were given to them by people who may or may not have broken their respective laws in acquiring or disclosing these documents. However, Luca mentioned the accusation that of sexual violence against Julian Assange in Sweden. Now, to be honest, I would like to ask, why was this brought up only now, an act that happened quite a few years ago? So do you not think that accusing Julian Assange only now of sexual violence was politically motivated? Another point which I'd like to make is the fact that Luca mentions that Assange is publishing the documents in sporadically, you know, and he claims that this might be a negative thing. But in fact, I believe this is the intent of Julian Assange, so that he will not spoil his aim. He believes that the quality of information, if he were to reveal all the documents at one time, the quantity of information would supersede the quality. You know, we need time to digest the information. So giving it out, releasing documents sporadically, people will be able to learn and read and interpret the raw data.
Thank you, Mikhail, for your enthusiastic rebuttal. On a further note, what information did WikiLeaks give us, and what was the reaction from the rest of the world? Luca, may you start us off?
Well, regarding the information published, they are various and different from each other. Some are reports of diplomats regarding the political scenario in different states. Others are just the personal life or profiles of different political leaders. In other cases, there have been published documents and reports on the massacres in Iraq, committed also by the American troops. But what were the reactions? The European press has been particularly impressed by the comments of diplomats regarding the European leaders. In some cases, there have been also strong comments, for instance, regarding the relationship between Russia and Italy, not only on the public affairs as energy, but also regarding the private interests of the leaders of the two states. However, the reaction to this explosion of information has been generally equal from the authorities of all the states. Any state, neither Iran, which was considered by the United States as a potential threat for the stability in the Middle East, has reacted in breaking the relationship with the United States itself. At the same time, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, condemned WikiLeaks because it is, and I just want to quote this this sentence, an attack of the international community, the alliances and the partnership, the convention and the negotiation that safeguard global security and advance economic prosperity. Most of the European leaders try to minimize their private scandal as simple gossip, as also the Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi have done.
Interesting points, Luca. What is yours, Stan Mikhail?
I'd like to mention a quotation by Julian Assange before I get to the point. Julian Assange said, if we are to produce a more civilized society, a more just society, it has to be based upon the truth, because judgments which are not based upon the truth can only lead to outcomes which are themselves false. So this is what I'd like to tell Luca, the fact that that although it might be damaging certain aspects of our diplomatic relations, I'd like to quote something from Julian Assange before I get to the point. Julian Assange says, if we are to produce a more civilized society, a more just society, it has to be based upon the truth, because judgments which are not based upon the truth can only lead to outcomes which are themselves false. So Luca was implying the fact that certain states might have skeletons in their closets. You know, if we do diplomacy, diplomatic relations, honestly, you know, they don't have to be secret. They don't have to keep information away from the general public. People say that Julian Assange has no regard for the consequences. Well, this is not true, in fact, because before publishing the documents, Julian Assange, well, his team rather, vetted the information in these documents so that at least certain sources and certain people, you know, would not be affected by the release of the publication of these documents. Also, there are those that argue that Julian Assange is not even a journalist. Well, fair enough, he might not be a journalist, but he is definitely a publisher, and WikiLeaks is his publishing house. So therefore, it is irrelevant to differ between one and the other, because both activities are protected by the freedom of the press and freedom of information laws. And I get to the point where Julian Assange should not be considered a criminal just by releasing the truth to the public.
Thank you, Mikhail, and thank you, Luca, for your alternate perspective. We'll have to stop here for a short break, but when we come back, we will speak to Mr. Elijah Waterman.
I come up in the dance with a slipper, said she, by the peanuts, epitome to or envy. A family affair, everything is carefree. I ain't get up off the wall until I heard Mary.
You get low and go high and you feel from the vibe as you get on the floor.
Trying to make it easy for everybody to dance with me.
So come on, come on, come everybody.
Come on, come on.
Me and you, all of us, about to really party.
Really party.
We're gonna put it down.
Get it down.
I know that you can feel me.
Welcome back to this episode of It's Debatable, a platform of discussion for the students at the University of Malta. Today we're discussing WikiLeaks and all it has caused. Joining us in the studio is Mr. Elijah Waterman, the Public Affairs Officer from the US Embassy. Mr. Waterman, you've been listening to what Luca and Mikhail had to say earlier on in the show. What is your opinion on the matter? What are your views on WikiLeaks? And how will WikiLeaks affect diplomacy, if at all?
Well, thank you. You have two very good questions. Initially, just to say that the U.S. government policy is not to comment specifically on classified and leaked materials. I can say the cable generally, it is a tool of diplomacy that is a method of communicating from your embassies in the field to the capitals of the home country. They reflect the daily internal deliberations, the analysis from the field that will then go back to inform the foreign policy of the nation. The cables are preliminary. They're incomplete expressions. Sometimes they even just reflect the opinion of the drafter themselves. So they do not in any way reflect the policy, but they do inform policy. So what is the effect of these disclosures upon diplomacy generally and upon the world as a whole? I think it's clear that these disclosures will put real lives at risk, and they will chill the engagement between nations on issues that are important to all of us, issues like nonproliferation and arms control, violent extremism, democracy, human rights, things that are important to all of the world will be set back to some degree by these disclosures. The conversations that are oftentimes reported in cables like the ones that are alleged to have been released are private conversations between people. And when they're reported back, they oftentimes, if they don't identify them by name, they identify them by organization. And governments can generally identify who they are, and there will be repercussions in many of the more despotic regimes of the world where we're trying to promote democracy and human rights. People will suffer in one way or another, even if names are redacted or taken out. And we've seen some of that already in certain countries of the world. But what will be the effect upon diplomacy? Diplomacy will continue. It's a long, slow process. As I mentioned, the cables themselves are sort of the basic method of communicating between embassies in the field and the home capitals for diplomats all over the world. Cable writing will continue. It's required that diplomats be able to candidly assess the environments of their host nations. It's how nations understand each other. It's how the world understands each other and how diplomacy works. Now, I think it's important to note that the disclosure is really an attack upon the foreign policy interests of every nation of the world. I think this is clear by the response of most other nations. It's an attack on the partnerships, the conversations, the negotiations that really safeguard global security and advance economic development. The Obama administration's worked very hard to develop these partnerships, and they certainly will withstand this this disclosure, but it certainly does set back a bit all of our efforts and all of the developed world's efforts to make the world a safer, better place.
I was wondering if you could tell me whether you think that in any way these WikiLeaks affairs violate the right to free speech that is so pivotal in America.
Well, I think it's a good question. The right to free speech is a right, but with all rights and privileges, there are certain responsibilities as well. In the U.S., for example, it would be a violation of law to yell fire haphazardly in a theater, knowing that people will be injured if there's not, in fact, a fire. And I think this is a similar type of a situation. While the stated sort of goal of WikiLeaks is laudable, transparent and accountable government, I think the method of how these alleged cables were obtained is questionable. There is an investigation going on to exactly how all of this happened.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Waterman, for your input and for your valuable time.
Great, thank you for having me.
Let us now return to our two debaters. Luca, What are the dangers of WikiLeaks, and is WikiLeaks acting illegally?
Well, before the publishing of the information, Mr. Koo, legal advisor of the United States Department, wrote a letter to Mr. Assange, inviting him to not publish any relevant news for the following reasons. First, is the risk of exposition of attacks to journalists and other innocent people, risk to compromise the military operations, risk to compromise the cooperation between states and the United States itself. Finally, what about the capability to expose such reserved documents even to potential terrorists? All these elements created certain criticism from the most eminent experts of security and intelligence services.
Thank you, Luca. And you, Mikhail, what is your view?
Assange believes that, I think, that it is time for a change in journalism. You know, he believes that humanity has evolved to a state where we as rational beings should be capable of understanding things for ourselves. You know, it is well known that the larger media houses have strong political affiliations, and thus much of the content of information they distribute is somewhat influenced by their political beliefs. So Assange believes that people should be able to view the raw data and interpret this for themselves. Now, if one thinks that one is not capable of formulating his own opinion from unedited, unspoiled information, then one is admitting ultimately that humanity, or at least one's own capacity of knowing, has not advanced. That we are not able to digest information, that we need someone else, a third party, to break it down and add a bit of sugar and make it taste better for us to understand. You know, so as a people of an advanced society, we should be at a stage where we understand that we should not limit ourselves to receiving our daily news from only one source. For example, locally. You know, it is unwise to simply read the Torcha or just in Nazion, watch only one news or only Net TV. And Luca, you come from Italy, you should, you know, it's unwise to read just Corriere della Sera or La Repubblica. To get a broader perspective on the affairs of the country, we must learn both sides of the story, so to speak. Now, what Assange is doing, I see, is that he's bypassing these popular media houses and, you know, and simply releasing information as it was produced by the original source. You know, people should read it and then read upon it. Then and only then can opinions be formulated. You know, one should be capable in identifying fiction from factual information, you know. If one is unable to do this, then one has no valid personal opinion, but only a reflection of what the journalists have edited and touched up in an effort to reflect the views of the newspapers, usually influenced by some political affiliation. So my point is that that I'm trying to make is that each and every one of us should be able to carry out an independent investigation of the truth.
Sorry, Mick, but I would like to ask you, who is telling us that this third party is super partes, we can say? I mean, who is telling me that the information that Assange is giving us are not pro Corriere della Sera or pro La Repubblica?
Well, exactly. Okay, if you believe that, then look it up. Don't just read the information, whether it's information from Corriere della Sera or whether it's the diplomatic cables themselves. You read both, you look into it, you do your own research, and then you formulate your own opinion. You know, I think we're doing a really big deal, a big fuss out of, you know, these diplomatic cables and thinking and assuming that they're going to affect our lives or at least diplomatic relations so much.
Thank you, Mikhail, for your opinion regarding media bias. Luca, may you please leave us with a closing comment?
Well, I think that WikiLeaks is still a threat for the international and national security of each state. Moreover, I would like to add that WikiLeaks is acting in an illegal way at the end. Yes, because the collaborators of Assange have to face several, have violated several laws. For example, Brady Manning has violated Article 92 and 94 of the Uniform Military Justice Code for, and I quote, transferring classified data into his personal computer and adding inauthorized software to a classified computer system, and communicating, transmitting, and delivering national defense information to unauthorized source. So basically, we are in front of an illegal action. So, and moreover, as we already said, I think that political leaders will not consider anymore all this gossip that most of the time have characterized the news of WikiLeaks and Assange.
Thank you, Luca. And your conclusion, Mikhail?
I'd like to make one point before I conclude. The fact that it's true, yes, Bradley Manning, that Luca mentioned, he did act against the law. But Bradley Manning does not form part of the WikiLeaks organization. He was a source, yes, and what WikiLeaks did, what Julian Assange and his team did, was release the information given to him by Bradley Manning, yes, who acted upon illegal, who acted illegally. So I agree with you there, but let us not associate Bradley Manning with the WikiLeaks organization, because the actions, what WikiLeaks is doing, there's no proof that it's doing anything illegal. It might be unethical, but that's a different question. Now, as my closing comment, obviously I am in favor of Assange's actions, because I too believe that society has reached adulthood. We have reached a certain sense of maturity, so we can handle hearing what politicians, where politicians spend our tax money and so on. The mass media doesn't like Assange because the media has become an overpopulated, money-making oriented segment, you know, that could easily be eliminated with the divulging of raw facts. So what I really think is that the impact of WikiLeaks has yet to be fully understood. We'll wait a bit more, maybe when more cables will come out. And I believe in the future we will begin to talk of a pre-WikiLeaks and a post-WikiLeaks, you know, both in the domain of diplomacy and political practices, as well as in journalism.
Thank you. That was Mikhail Pisani. I would also like to thank today's other participants, Luca Lacetignuola, and our academic advisor, Dr. Carmen Somut, as well as Dr. Kalea, our head of department, Kenneth Mitzi for his technical assistance, and Joyce Gregg for her coordination. Finally, a special thank you to our guest, Mr. Elijah Waterman, for his input. To our dear listeners, I do hope you enjoyed today's program. You too can have your say on the discussion, online. Go to www.mirsa.org. That's www.mirsa.org. And click on It's Debatable. On behalf of the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Student Association, I, Hilary Briffa, thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us next week. Until then, keep updated.